This time tomorrow, we're down at Talking Stick Resort Arena, where the Suns are going to take on the Dallas Mavericks in the, I can't believe it's already the season opener for the Phoenix Suns. New head coach, new general manager, franchise center, Devin Booker back off of injury, good to go, ready to play tomorrow. There's going to be, it's Ayton versus Doncic tomorrow. There is going to be an awful lot to pay attention to, and yet, when it's all said and done, here we are talking about a Suns team, and you sent me a link today for an ESPN story, kind of their preseason predictions. What'd they say, 26 wins for the Phoenix Suns?
26 wins for the Phoenix Suns.
Does that sound wrong to you? Does that sound wrong?
It's just not what I want. You're selling your house, and somebody says, you're thinking a house is worth, you know, a million, and somebody comes in and says, it's only worth, I only got appraisal for $850. I don't want $850 for it.
I want a million.
I don't want 26 wins. I want 31 wins. I don't want 26 wins. I don't want to be in the 20s again.
Let me put it this way.
I'm tired of being in the 20s.
When you filled out the thing.
Nothing against being in the 20s, but I.
You can't relate to being in the 20s anymore. When we filled out the thing on ArizonaSports.com, we were asked for a win total.
Yeah.
All right. What did you predict? Do you remember?
31.
So you went with what you wanted and not what you thought? Or do you really think they're going to win 31 games this year?
I think I went with 31.
Well, I'm just asking. Did you go with what you want, or do you go with what you think?
I mean, why can't it be like? Can it be the same thing?
No, they're two totally different things.
I want 50.
Well, of course.
Okay, so I want 50 wins.
Do you really think they're going to win 31 games this year? I know you want them to. I get that. I totally get that. Do you think they're going to win 31 games this year?
Yes.
Okay. As long as you think that, then that's fine.
I'm not, like, confident in the prediction.
As long as you believe that, that's fine. I get the difference between wanting and predicting, between hoping for and what I think is actually
going to
happen.
How many games did the Diamondbacks win this year?
82.
I was close. I said 84. Like, I was really good on that. I had a solid prediction for the Diamondbacks.
But you didn't want them to win 84.
No, I wanted them to win 95, but I predicted they would win 84.
Okay, so it's all...
I predicted they would win 84 games. I came very, very close to it. I'm going to predict 31 wins.
Okay. I want to make sure you're not confusing what you want and what you think. That's all. If that number is the same number to you, that's fine. But I'm wondering if you're confusing what you want and what you think is going to happen with the Phoenix Suns.
Can't always get what you want.
Well, I'll tell you what.
But if you try...
26 wins is not what I need. I'll tell you that
right now.
The Rolling Stones got that wrong. You're right. You can't always get what you want, but 26 wins is not what I need.
How many wins did you say?
I think I said 26 or 27. I don't think they're 10 wins better than a year ago. I think I said 26 or 27.
I'm going to find out what I wrote.
DeAndre Ayton is making his debut, of course, in the NBA. And very interesting comment today. He was asked a question about playing on national TV because tomorrow's game is nationally televised against the Mavs. And he said, look, I'm an entertainer, not a basketball player.
Oh, yeah, I'm an entertainer. You know, I don't look at myself as a basketball player. I like to entertain people, you know. I don't like doing jump hooks all day. I like to run and jump, shoot the ball. So doing this is fun. And, you know, I look forward to times like this, playing in front of everybody and showing what I got.
What is this, the Harlem Globetrotters? You're going to start, like, hiding the ball into your shirt, putting it behind your back, bouncing it off your head. I'm
an entertainer. I'm not a basketball player. I'm here to entertain people. No, actually, you're here to play basketball.
Yeah.
No, I.
Who's that cat coming down the
street? Here we go. Is DeAndre out there tomorrow night?
Metal lock.
He's gonna be twirling the ball on one finger. Yeah, that's great. I want 20 points and 12 rebounds. Stat. I don't care if you can dribble the ball between your legs five times.
Curly something. Or Curly Neal. What was it? Curly.
Spin the basketball.
Metal
on
lock.
Your
lemon. I'm trying to think if I can name any Harlem Globetrotters.
Curly was one of them.
Curly. Metal lark. Can we name another one? Anybody?
No.
Anybody?
I can't.
You guys are killing me.
I'm an entertainer, not a basketball player.
Wow. Hey, whatever, man.
Whatever.
Just go get 20 and 10.
If you get 20 and 12, you can call yourself
whatever you
want to
be.
Whatever you want.
Want to be Justin Bieber, you be Justin Bieber.
You can label yourself however you want to label yourself.
You'll get 20 points and 15 rebounds.
He says he's excited
you'll
to start.
Be entertaining
his,
me.
He says he's excited to start his first season.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. you know, officially playing in front of all the fans. Obviously, I don't want to show it, but trust me, I'm doing backflips in my mind right now. And I'm just trying to get ready the right way.
Devin Booker is also excited for DeAndre Ayton to begin his career.
And I was talking to DeAndre today. You know, I was told him I'm more excited for him. You know, it's the start of, you know, his legacy, you know, his new career. I told him that today in his locker. And, you know, my job is to make it special for him and, you know, not make it like my first 3 years. So turn around, let him be known as a winner. Let our whole organization turn around to a winning franchise.
You know what? And I guess in my mind, I was thinking about what DeAndre Ayton said. I think maybe I sort of understand what he's talking about. Okay, maybe.
Okay.
And maybe this is a reach, okay? I'm an entertainer and I'm not a basketball player. Well, if you're a really, really, really good basketball player, you can become an entertainer, right?
Are you an entertainer? That's our job. We have to entertain people every day.
Sure. But
that's
what
we do.
When people ask me what I do for a living, I don't say I'm an entertainer. I say I'm a talk show host. Do I entertain people? I don't know. That's up to you out there listening right now in that car speaker of yours. Do I entertain people?
Hey, tomorrow's poll question is, Dave Burns entertaining
you? Do you describe yourself as an entertainer to people?
I don't.
I think that's part of our responsibility.
I'm not just going to sit here and just talk. You know, part of it is we entertain. Yeah,
I agree.
Let people into our lives. I mean, we want people to know who we are. And
sure,
I've always been an open book. Let people know everything about my family and everything that's going on. I mean,
but that's not how I describe myself
as an entertainer.
And I've been with you for 7 years.
I've
never heard you describe yourself like
no,
that.
No, but you are in the entertainment business.
Sure,
you turn on the radio every day, and for 4 hours, your job is to entertain.
But if you become a really good,
are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
What did that say? That's Russell Crowe from Gladiator.
After Gladiator.
He like kills some dude or some tiger or something in the Colosseum, or maybe it's like when he's auditioning for the Colosseum, and all the people are revolted at how gory it was, and he's like, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Oh, it was a great part of the movie. It's a great part of the
Have
movie.
Have you ever been? You've never been to the Colosseum?
No, I've never been to the Colosseum.
God, you got
to
go there.
Is Russell Crowe there? Is he killing people?
No, but it's like I've been to the Eiffel Tower in France, and it looks like it's just like a big hunk of metal. When you go to the Colosseum, it's like, wow, that stuff really happened there.
Yeah.
Like they had gladiator fights there. They had public hangings and stonings and animal fights and fights between gladiators and gladiators and animals that all happened like right there.
Did you ever see
And you feel like, when you're there, you're like, wow, you're like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
The Colosseum is amazing.
Well, back then, I imagine people were entertained. I think what DeAndre Ayton means, I'm not sure, but I think, is that if he becomes a big enough star at this, he's got the kind of personality where he could become an entertainer. Kind of like LeBron James is an entertainer. Peyton Manning is an entertainer. I mean, you know, he's a football player. LeBron's a basketball player. Chris Paul's a basketball player, but his State Farm commercials are very entertaining, right? I mean, it's there's a way if you become good enough at this basketball thing, you can kind of blur the lines a little bit. Now, first things first, go be a good basketball player. You know, the entertainer thing, that's great. You can aspire to that. You should aspire to that if you want. For now, let's just be a basketball player and see where we get from that. But I get it. Yeah, we're entertainers. Sure. But I would never describe myself like that to anybody.
DeAndre, be whoever you want to aspire to be. As long as you go kick somebody's. Go Von Miller. Go beat some ass.
Devin Booker was asked today when he knew he'd be ready for tomorrow's opener.
The day I found out I had surgery. I was going to have surgery. You know, we were going over the dates, and first thing I checked was October 17th. And they said it was going to be a 6-week procedure, and we're pulling up right on 6 weeks. So, you know, that's something I was very excited for, something that every day in rehab that I was thinking about, and now that day's here.
Igor Kokoschkov announced yesterday Booker's going to play tomorrow night. Why does Booker think he's ready to come back?
It's an injury that can't get worse. You know what I'm saying? Especially with the buddy tape, that it can get worse. It's just, you know, the soreness, you know, able to take hits on it, which, you know, I've taken plenty of hits in practice now, and now I trust it and believe that, you know, it's ready to go for full contact, and that's what I've been doing the past week.
I'll be curious to see how rusty he is tomorrow. I'll be curious to see how off he is trying to fit into an offense that is brand new and has basically been running without him for the last 4 weeks because of the surgery. It's got the potential to be a little awkward at first. I don't know how else to describe it. It could be a little choppy the first few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think so, too. I mean, we talked about this. So possibility he's going to be playing with all these guys that he's never played with before.
Sure.
I mean, that's just...
It's possible that every single guy he starts with tomorrow is somebody he's never played a basketball game with. It's possible.
Yeah. Now, Jamal, just an up-to-date, up-to-the-minute report on Jamal, his availability for tomorrow, he's not sure. It will depend on if he gets his physical done in time. So he has not taken his physical yet. It will not be until tomorrow that Jamal Crawford takes his physical. And at that time, that will determine whether he is able to play or not. So as of right now, he's telling me it depends on if he's able to get the physical done in time, whether he's going to be available for tomorrow night's game.
It's a Pick Your Thursday Night Ticket Window Tuesday, brought to you by Arizona Central Credit Union. It's real simple. Later today, we're giving you the chance to win your choice of tickets to either see the Cardinals take on the Broncos or ASU take on Stanford. They're both happening on Thursday night, and you get your choice. Just listen at 4:15 for your chance to win. He is one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history. But as the leader of an NFL organization, John Elway still has plenty of room to improve, and he might look at the Cardinals with a mixture of regrets. That's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Elway is revered, and rightfully so, as a legend in the Denver football community.
Back-to-back Super Bowls, and then he retired.
Super Bowl champion as a quarterback.
Waited forever to get him. Finally got a running game, and then he won two Super Bowls.
Super Bowl champion as an executive, right?
Yes, brought in Peyton Manning and won a Super Bowl.
Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl, and yet John Elway, and with the Cardinals-Broncos game coming up on Thursday, man, the more stories you read about the state of the Broncos franchise right now, the more you get a sense that maybe for the first time ever, the fan base in Denver is going, can we trust John Elway? Does John Elway know what he's doing? Is John Elway making the right decisions? Is he, firing head coaches, the guy he's hiring, not getting the job done, bringing in quarterbacks, not drafting quarterbacks? And we were having a real honest conversation before the show about the Cardinals versus the Broncos. And I know the Broncos have a better record right now and certainly have a better pedigree than the Arizona Cardinals. But the thing the Cards have that the Broncos don't is hope in the future at quarterback, because they took Josh Rosen.
And the Broncos don't have that. I mean, last year they had Brock Osweiler, they had Paxton, and they had Trevor Siemian. Paxton Lynch and Trevor Siemian. Those were their three quarterbacks. 22 interceptions. Only the Browns were worse. And what did they do this year? They went out and got Case Keenum. Now, Case Keenum had a career year for the Minnesota Vikings, a career year. 22 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, 67.6% completion rate, led his team to the NFC Championship game. But there were a lot of questions about whether that was, like, is that the best? Because there are guys that have, they're one-hit wonders. Nick Foles was probably more of a one-hit wonder or a two-hit wonder. One great year and then one great run in the playoffs. There's a lot of people that didn't think that Case Keenum would be able to duplicate that. Well, he's come to the Denver Broncos, and if you look at his numbers, it's not that good.
He's got 8 interceptions. I think he leads the league in that number. He's only got 7 touchdowns on the season.
Right.
He's getting booed routinely by his home crowd. I mean, there was a moment in Sunday's game against the Rams where they brought Chad Kelly out, and he was just out there to take a knee. He got like a standing ovation from the Broncos fans.
Love the backup quarterback when you saw it's not doing
just
good.
Because, they saw him coming out there, and he was just out there to take a knee.
Can you imagine, and this is the one thing that we have that some of these other organizations, we have the hope that Josh Rosen's going to be a franchise quarterback. Can you imagine if the Arizona Cardinals had given Case Keenum a 2-year deal with $25 million guaranteed? He got a 2-year deal for $36 million with $25 guaranteed. And you knew he was your quarterback for the next 2 years, and you had no rookie quarterback. You had nothing. I mean, that would suck. Now, talent-wise, I mean, the Broncos have, a lot of talent. I mean, between Von Miller and Bradley Chubb was phenomenal last week. They got talent. But I think I'd rather be the Cardinals, because at least I know I have a quarterback that could be something special going forward. And you've got Case Keenum. And you're going to need a new quarterback. I mean, Elway was in Oregon scouting, how do you pronounce his name? Justin Herbert?
Yeah.
The Oregon quarterback. He was there scouting him. So he was there. So, like,
he didn't have a very good game either. And he knew John Elway was there to watch him, and he didn't have a very good game.
He knows he's Washington. Listen, Elway knows he's got to go get his quarterback now. I mean, but Case Keenum was a, was a short term. Okay, let's see if we can catch lightning in a bottle. Let's see if that was the real Case Keenum, and Keenum hasn't played well.
John Elway, in his radio appearance on 760 AM, the Orange and Blue show, said, look, the mentality needs to be that we are fighting for our lives.
Anytime you get in a losing streak where we've lost four in a row, obviously it's very difficult to stay positive, and you really have to make an effort to stay positive with it, continue to try to work at it, because that's the only way we're going to get out of this. And so hopefully we can continue to do that this week, and with a short week, get turned around and take a mentality into that Thursday night game that we're fighting for our lives.
Vance Joseph, the head coach of the Broncos, was asked yesterday if he interpreted that statement to mean that he has to fight for his job this week in Thursday Night Football against the Cards. Quote, absolutely. Absolutely. That's every coach in this league every week, close quote. And the speculation is rampant. We talk about Mike McCoy so much. Speculation is rampant that if it's the Broncos who lose this game on Thursday, that Vance Joseph could be out. That he could be out as head coach of the Denver Broncos, and they could start over again in that regard.
Yeah, I could see that. They changed his whole coaching staff, okay? And it wasn't just Mike McCoy. There's a lot of talk about how they fired Mike McCoy last year after 10 games. He added six new coaches this year. And, I mean, they have not won an AFC West road game since Peyton Manning was their quarterback. That's how long it's been since they've gone on the road in their division and won a game. Peyton Manning was their quarterback. Now, Gary Kubiak retired. He had health concerns. He was 55 years old. Remember, he was hospitalized with a migraine. He had the mini stroke and collapsed, when he was, coaching the Texans. So they hired Vance Joseph. He was, in some ways, and I just want to play to you a point on the offense. Vance Joseph was the defensive coordinator from Miami.
Mm-hmm.
He was a defensive coordinator from Miami. They went, defense. He was a DB coach with Cincinnati.
That sounds familiar.
And so I'm saying, this is like, so.
This sounds familiar.
So they hired Vance. So when Kubiak retired because of health concerns, they hired Vance Joseph, who was a defensive coordinator in Miami, had been a defensive back coach before, and they gave him the job. And then, after they started 3-7, they fired McCoy and they put in Bill Musgrave. And it was just a lot of, they lost 8 games in a row. I mean, that was the longest skid in 50 years for the Broncos. It was a really bad year for the Denver Broncos.
It was, and it was kind of highlighted by bad decisions that were made. I mean, you talk about hiring Vance Joseph. That was the year the Rams hired Sean McVay. And how does that – now, I don't know. Could the Broncos have gotten McVay? I don't know. It didn't seem like they were very interested at the time. In that draft, the draft before, the Rams got Jared Goff. The Broncos took Paxton Lynch. Last year, sitting at number 5, they had the opportunity to take Josh Allen. They had the opportunity to take Josh Rosen.
They let Wade Phillips go, too.
They let Wade Phillips go, too.
And he went to the Rams.
They passed on both of those guys and took Bradley Chubb. Now, Bradley Chubb's a great player.
He is a great player.
He's a very – but – to your point about
the Giants
feeling better about the Cardinals or the Broncos, the one thing we have over them is that we've got the guy that we believe is our franchise quarterback that we think is going to be here for the next 10 to 15 years, and you don't. And you need to figure out who that is. And you might not finish in a position to be able to draft the Oregon kid.
Listen,
or the NC State kid or anybody else to be your franchise quarterback, depending on where you finish.
I mean, I give the Rams a lot of credit. And when the Rams hired McVay, the kid's 30. He was 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, youngest coach since 1938, and they hired him. I mean, how many teams would have hired a 30-year-old kid to be? I would say he's a kid. But how many people would have hired a 30-year-old to be their coach?
Wasn't the story, though, that had Bruce retired 1 year earlier than he did, that McVay would have been at the top of Steve Keim's list?
That would have been genius.
That was the story.
He was smart. He hired Wade Phillips. I mean, Wade Phillips has been around forever as a coordinator, and he was a head coach, too, 3 times. So that's just worked out perfectly. I mean, that couldn't have worked out any better.
Elway's got some work to do. His organization has some work to do. For ASU to make a bowl game in Herm Edwards' first season is Thursday night. Must win for the Sun Devils. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Mark May, May Day. College Football Hall of Famer and College Football Insider Mark May with Burns and Gambo.
Mayday, before we ask you about ASU and the problems with U of A, Mark May, our college football insider, joining us in the Burns and Gambo Show. I want to start with what was kind of the news of the day, if I could, out of college football. Nick Bosa withdrew from school from Ohio State to focus on rehabbing his injury, his core muscle injury, and he will not return to prepare for the draft. Is this an isolated incident, or do you think we're going to see more of this in upcoming years?
We may start seeing more of this. I think Miles Jack did this, what, a few years ago when he got injured? There's been a couple of players in the past that have done this. Once they've got injured, they just said, I'm done. And I think one of those things where you're looking
at... I don't remember those happening this early in the season, though. And maybe early is relative speaking, but I thought a lot of some of those guys did it kind of later in the year, but I could be wrong.
Some of them did it closer to the bowl season and stuff like that. But I think here's the key. If you know you're going to be a top 10 pick, why risk it? You've already been injured throughout the season. You want to come back for the old college try and all that stuff? Yeah, that sounds great. But look, you're done with college. You've got a future in the NFL for hopefully a decade. You're going to get paid big bucks over the next decade and for your first contract in the NFL being a top 10 pick. That's what you're going to look forward to. That's what you need to make sure that you prepare for. It's great to do the college thing. I understand it. I love college football, and you know that. But the thing is, if you're an individual and you know that you're going to be a high pick in the NFL draft, protect yourself, because you're protecting yourself and your family for your future and your long-term wealth.
I understand it. I mean, I get it. The times have changed. There's a lot of money at stake here. So,
it's not like back when I played, when I was playing for peanuts.
I know. It's true. I mean, the money makes a difference. I mean, you're right. I mean, back in your day, the money wasn't as great. So you didn't even think about it. But now with the money so great, I do understand what these kids are doing.
It's hard to think when you were playing with a leather helmet. I mean, I can't imagine.
Hey. My last couple of years, guys, I did make seven figures.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, you did play against Coach Newt Rockne, right?
Yeah.
And
Lou Holtz was his coach.
Exactly. All right, let's before we get to ASU, I want to ask you, Pac-12, are they done? I mean, with the Oregon victory over Washington, Washington needed to win. They got some help with LSU beating Georgia, but is the Pac-12 finished for now?
I think they kind of are. They need a lot of things to go their way. If Oregon runs the table and wins out, they've got a shot because everyone.
No, they don't. I totally disagree.
If they end up with one loss and they win the Pac-12,
there's no way.
The only thing that's going to hurt them is their non-conference opponent.
Bowling Green, Portland State, and San Jose State.
That's the only thing that's going to hurt them.
You can't put them in a playoff.
But here's the thing, Gambo.
You can't.
If everyone cannibalizes each other with two losses,
you're
still a Pac-12 conference champion. Yes, you can.
You cannot put – the Oregon's already lost to Stanford. They played Bowling Green, Portland State, and San Jose State. Now, again, that's not their fault. They had scheduled who did they schedule that pulled out? They had somebody scheduled that was decent.
I can't remember. Yeah.
But like, none of these schools are these aren't real schools. Portland State, Bowling Green, and San Jose State. Like you can't put a team in a playoff whose non-conference schedule of those three teams.
So you're telling me if they're Pac-12 conference champions the Big 12 has a two-loss team and the Big 10 has a two-loss team.
Not putting them in.
And the ACC has a two-loss team and the SEC has a one-loss team.
I'll bet you a ribeye. There's no way that they can put Oregon in. There's no way.
Ooh, I'll take a thick one from Delmonico's.
Whatever. Okay, I'll bet you a ribeye that if they end up undefeated, they cannot go to the playoffs. They played FCS schools.
We'll see, but at the end of the season, remember what they said. This is what the selection committee said. Conference championships matter. And the thing is, that's what may hurt Notre Dame in the end, because they don't play in a conference. We're going to see how the selection committee views Notre Dame at the end of the season.
I think
the BCS when they went undefeated or not?
A two-loss team from the Big 12 gets in over a one-loss team in Oregon.
Wow.
Because Oregon, I mean, come on, man, they didn't play anybody.
But still, you look at the teams in the Big 12, who did they play? Texas got beat by Maryland. Maryland, 2 years in a row. If they end up with two losses and they're the conference champ, you're going to put them in?
Yes.
Oh, good golly.
Yeah.
Mayday, let's move on to ASU. This game against Stanford coming up on Thursday night. Lose this game and they have to win a road game to be bowl eligible. Does that, by default, make this a must-win game for ASU?
Absolutely. And I think look at the remainder of their schedule. This is a must game. And the key to this is, look at their record. They're undefeated at home. They just can't win on the road. So you look at this game on Thursday night, they've got a great chance to win. You don't know how healthy Bryce Love is because he's got that lower leg injury. And if he does play in this game, all it could take is one tackle and he's out. And they're totally different football team without him in there. This is one of David Shaw's worst teams overall, I think. Because remember with Stanford, they always had the two tight ends, the three tight end package where they just pound you into submission and run the ball for 250 yards a game. They're not that team anymore. They're throwing the ball more with Costello, and they're using their big wide receivers and tight ends on the outside, but they just can't consistently run the football. That's going to hurt them. On the other side of the coin, if you look at Arizona State, they can run the ball because Eno Benjamin's done a great job the last two or three games. Manny Wilkins, if you look at his numbers, they're still up there. He only has one interception on the season and 11 touchdowns, so they've got the offense to compete with Stanford and to beat Stanford. They just have to get it done on both sides of the ball, and it all depends what type of team Stanford shows up with on Thursday night. I still like Arizona State in this game, and I think Herman and his crew is going to get it done.
Thursday night game, so you know, there's always something crazy about these Thursday night games. Stanford doesn't look like they're, you know, the powerhouse team that David Shaw has had so many years. But ASU loses this game. We and Burns, you've talked about this. They've got to win three games to be bowl eligible. If they lose this game, it means they're going to have to go win one on the road.
Yep.
And although they've played teams close on the road, they have not won on the road yet.
Well, I still think they have opportunities if you look at the rest of the schedule. UCLA, we don't know. They're getting better, but they're still not that good. Utah's so up and down. They're Jekyll and Hyde.
Utah's
good. Arizona's not good.
Utah. I believe in Utah. They're good.
They got beat by Washington State.
Washington State could put up a lot of points.
They haven't played anybody.
They could put up a lot of points. I'm just saying they could put up a lot of points.
They could put up a lot of points, but they already lost to USC.
Okay, Texas beat USC. You were ripping on Texas before.
Yeah, USC isn't that good. They're playing a freshman quarterback, and they've got a lot of people injured, and they're one of the most penalized teams in the nation.
I mean, Washington State, I'm not saying that they're a great football team, but they beat Utah. They're tough
at home at the Palouse. We all know that. That's a nasty environment to play in, and nobody wants to go there to play. So that's going to be a tough game for Oregon this week.
Has USC, Mark Mayer, College Football Insider, here on the Burns and Gambo Show, do you think USC has reasserted itself as the leader in the Pac-12 South?
I think they're probably the team to beat right now, but there's really no team that's a front runner the way they beat Colorado. Colorado, if you look at their schedule, they hadn't beaten a team with a winning record, and USC just has better talent than Colorado from top to bottom. If you look at this game, USC's defense didn't play that great, but they had some big plays in the game. Their offense didn't rush the ball well. They had 62 yards on the ground, and all the penalties that they had in this football game. Now, there's a lot, when you look at this team, there's a lot of youth, there's a lot of good athletes. They have to get everybody healthy. They're coming off the bye week. If they can get better each and every week, and I think Clay Helton will do that, they're going to be tough at the end of the season, but he's playing a lot of young players on that program.
I was shocked, and if I knew this, I had forgotten this. They have not lost at home under Coach Helton. They have not lost a single game at home under Coach Helton. I was not aware of that.
He's doing a good job. He's doing a solid job. Everybody's trying to run him out of that job. You know, everyone I talk to, my dentist is trying to get Clay Helton fired? Yeah, he wants him fired. He wants him fired at the beginning of the season after the first 3 weeks. It's like, come on, Stoey, really? You know, give the guy a chance. A couple of years ago you wanted him fired and he took you to the Rose Bowl. Just be patient. It's early in the season. You know, for some reason the USC fans think that they're Alabama now, that every week, just because of their history, that they're going to go undefeated and be in the top five. It just doesn't happen that way.
This is the best Saban team that I've ever seen. I mean, they've had great teams. This one's ridiculous. Notre Dame, does it hurt them a little bit that they played such a weak opponent this week? Does the quality of opponent, I mean, to get to 7-0, they beat a patsy, does it hurt them that their strength of schedule this week was so low with their victory over Pitt?
Let me tell you one thing in that game, if you break that game down. That game was a home cook officiating disaster.
Here we go.
Tell you what, if you looked at the pass interference calls that were called against Pittsburgh, it was a joke and they wouldn't call on the other side. Here's one thing. The rules expert for NBC in the booth on the personal foul of roughing the passer said exactly these words because I wrote it down for Lou. I wouldn't have made that call.
You wrote that down for Lou?
I wrote
it
down. Because I had to go back and contour it. It was like, he said that. I want to make sure I wrote down exactly what he said. He said, I wouldn't have made that call.
All right,
but
so
the
you
thing
don't...
is, if you look at Notre Dame, hey, Pittsburgh had a great defense. Pat Narduzzi did a terrific job of taking away the reads of Ian Book from left to right. He couldn't make his first read or his second read. They took those away at a difficult time throwing the ball in that game. And Notre Dame, look, Pitt held them to 80 yards rushing, and Pitt killed them in the return game. They had 144 return yards, and Notre Dame's 12.
All right, Mayday. The Mayday payday has not paid a whole lot these days. So
going the other way against the Mayday payday.
What's your Mayday payday this week?
Franklin said we need to be an elite program. They just came off a 1-point loss at home to Ohio State. They got Michigan State coming to Happy Valley, and they laid an egg. Their quarterback, Trace McSorley, had 640 yards or whatever against
Man, can you just get one right? Like, literally, can you get one right?
I'm giving you one right right now.
I mean, just one. Like, I mean,
Oklahoma,
you're over the season.
Oklahoma's given a touchdown at TCU. Ruffin McNeil's the new defensive coordinator. Guess what? They're going to roll over TCU in this football game because they've got a new defensive coordinator, and Mike Stoops is finally out of there.
All right, so basically, based on your predictions, just take TCU and you'll be in the money.
And you'll run to the bank,
Bank with Mayday payday.
Thanks, Mayday. We
appreciate
it. I'd rather
have the payday candy bar than your pick.
Mark May, our college football insider, brought to you by Breaks Plus. They are the Breaks expert. Come experience the Plus. Visit BreaksPlus.com to schedule your appointment today. The Arizona Cardinals run game missing in action so far this season. What's the cause? How do they fix it? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. So in addition to all of the drama that's going on behind the scenes potentially with this game on Thursday night, Mike McCoy, is this it? Vance Joseph, is this it? There's going to be a lot of coaching stuff, a lot of coaching angles to Thursday night's game between the Broncos and the Cardinals. There's also the very simple fact of... Thank you. I knew that was coming. There's the very simple matter of an offense that is broken, an offense that needs to be fixed, a running back who needs to be fixed, whose productivity levels are nowhere near what it needs to be.
I'm looking forward to seeing what Byron Leftwich can do with the group.
Are you really?
Yeah, I am. I'm looking forward to seeing what Byron can do when he gets his hands on him.
Yeah, well, this Thursday night, in the meantime, before Byron Leftwich takes over the play-calling duties.
I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself here.
Just a little
bit. Jumping the gun.
Mike McCoy, today was the day that he met with the media, and obviously he's under a lot of fire, and obviously there's a lot of people who think that this might be it for Mike McCoy on Thursday, depending on how things go offensively. Going more up-tempo, he says, yeah, there's different ways you could try that.
In certain situations, it's different. You know, is it a two-minute drill? Is it a controlled, controlled tempo? Last week when you're down so many scores, you go a little bit quicker. There's times where it's early in a game where it's, you know, hey, you got as much time as you want to use that clock, try to gather information from the defense. So it all depends on what situation you're in. But it's nothing different for him. You know, with him and Mason making the calls and Josh echoing certain things, redirecting protections, he's got to communicate to everybody, and everyone's got to do a great job of communicating, which they did the other day in the game, of passing plays out and things.
But specifically when it comes to the run game, Mike McCoy says the offensive line play has been up and down all year.
There's good and bad in every week. I think, looking back at last week, the way, you're talking about Josh a little bit, the way he directed the traffic and all the pressures and certain things, that he made certain calls and it might not have been picked up the right way. There's certain ways certain players have stepped up and gotten better. The more reps they play together, the better they'll be. So there's always positives, but we got to make more plays as an offense.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, no blank, Sherlock. Man, you haven't had 300 yards in one game yet. We got to make better. I mean, listen, you're not telling me anything we all don't know. The plays aren't, it's not happening. I mean, his offense is no good. It's not working. It's broken. It's not working. We keep waiting for changes, for something to change. We're not seeing it. Larry Fitzgerald every week, got to get Fitz more involved. Is he more involved? No. Got to get David Johnson going. Get David Johnson going? No. There is nothing. I mean, every week we just keep waiting for it. And we just keep getting disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, we just keep getting disappointed. Every week you're hopeful that this is the week. It's going to happen, and it doesn't happen. Well, now after six games, I've seen enough. I mean, after the first two games, the first three games, I mean, I know we were talking after the first four games. I think it was the first four games. They had like 37 points total or something, right?
Sounds about right.
And it was like, wow, I mean, it's unbelievable. And we've been raving about the offenses in the NFL and how great the offenses have been and how many teams are averaging 37 points a game, and the Cardinals have 37 points in four games. And you could talk all you want, man. Show me something. I mean, maybe. And maybe with you believing that your job's on the line, you'll absolutely open it up on Thursday. And, I mean, why not? You got nothing to lose.
Yeah, I do wonder if he'll call a different type of game. If the pressure wasn't there, would he call a different type of game, right? You know, if there wasn't this sense of, man, you better come out and show everybody something, would he call the same kind of game if that pressure was there? I don't know. I do know, we talked about this a little bit yesterday.
specifically as it relates to David Johnson, somebody tweeted out a graphic. Somebody I think who works over at the Ringer tweeted out a graphic of here are the Arizona Cardinals. They're 28th or 29th in the league in rushing attempts, but they're first in the league in rushing attempts up the middle, which is a very common criticism of Cardinals fans when it comes to this run game. David Johnson up the middle. David Johnson up the middle. Always up the middle. And we even talked, remember we talked about this yesterday? How the design of their offensive line is almost to kind of funnel the run plays to the middle, right? That's where the strength is. Even though they haven't been very good at it, that's sort of the design of the play. He was asked today, he being McCoy, if the amount of runs up the middle is what they're aiming for.
We've called what we've called. You know, it's so I guess the answer to that is yes, because we called them that way. But yeah, I think certain plays cut back, certain plays are designed to go certain places. I don't have all the exact numbers of those numbers you've said of how many were to go outside. But, you know, hey, we've called what we've called.
We've called what we've called.
I don't have the exact numbers of what we. Yeah, they want to go north, south. They want. I mean, listen, some of it makes sense. I got a lot of money in Mike Iupati. I got a lot of money in Justin Pugh. I want to go in between. I want to run off my guards. I want to run behind them. They're road graders. They're supposed to. And Justin Pugh, by the way, is going to try and play with his broken hand on Thursday.
Oh, interesting.
He is going to try and go on Thursday. So we can report that he's going to try to give it a go. Well, I'm not sure he's going to be able to play or not, but he wants to play on Thursday. He's going to try and play on Thursday. But you want to run behind those guys. I mean, those are. You know, those are good football players. They're good offensive linemen. You're supposed to be able to run north-south. I think David Johnson's partly to blame. I think he's thinking too much. I think he's waiting a little too long. He's not hitting the holes as quickly as he should. I think the offensive line has had some issues. I do think when you've got a rookie, again, when you've got a rookie center and you've got a rookie quarterback, you're having a hard time figuring out where to shift the protection. You're having a hard time identifying who's up in the box, who's the Mike linebacker, where the safety is. And this is just something that I think they'll improve on. But to just blow that off and say that that's not a part, it is a part of it. There is a part of it that rookie center, rookie quarterback, you've got to figure out where the where they're overloading, what side. You've got to figure out where to shift the protection on the offensive line. And if they're coming full blow on a blitz up the middle, I mean, you may want to run the sweep outside. They're probably not running enough sweeps outside. They're probably not getting enough plays outside. I agree with you. But I understand the philosophy in wanting to run straight ahead, north, south, over, east,
sure.
West. I understand that philosophy.
Sure. It's just, again, it's scheme and talent. And I understand the talent on the offensive line maybe is designed for those runs to go up the middle a little bit. But is that the best way to utilize the talent of David Johnson? You know, is the kind of defense they're playing the best way to utilize the talent of Patrick Peterson? Is the kind of defense they're playing the best way to utilize the roster and what you have at linebacker? I mean, these are sort of the questions that on a week-by-week basis we're kind of forced to examine a little bit. You know, this is your roster. This is who's on it. Are you coaching it to the best of your ability to tailor it to what's on your roster? Or are you so married to the idea of what this football team should be? A power running team up the middle, or a 4-2-5 defense, that you're more married to that than you are the players that you have to run it. Because that's where things can get a little complicated for a coach. You want to believe that every team has a coach who goes, you know what? I prefer to do it this way, but I look at my roster and I see that I should do it this other way. So based off of what have on my what I have on my roster, I'm going to do it this other way. Even though I'd rather do it this way. I'd rather do it my way. The other way is going to be better because I have the personnel to do it.
You're bringing up something. I don't know. Blake Murphy did a really good job. What's this? Revenge of the Birds. He did a really good job going back and just taking out a bunch of old tweets that talked about how Steve Wilks, this is a rebuild. This is not a rebuild. This is a retool. I think we have the pieces in place. And then, he's got a bunch of different quotes from a lot of different people, one including me, saying that Wilks will adjust to whatever, he could run a 3-4, he could run a 4-3. Wilks has coached both a 4-3 and a 3-4, so what he will run here in Arizona will depend solely on the personnel. So this is all the stuff that, we were led to believe. This was back in January, that was one of my tweets, and a lot of people tweeting, and it just doesn't seem like that, right? It doesn't seem like they have adjusted to the personnel that they have on this team, whether it's the offense with David Johnson and Fitzgerald or the defense with the 3-4-4-3, 4-2-5. Yeah. It seems like they haven't made that adjustment.
If there's ever any part of the show that you want, we can give you the whole show.
The whole show.
Text the word podcast.
Nothing but the show.
Nothing but the show. Text the word podcast to 620-620 and subscribe to the Burns and Gambo podcast on Google Play or iTunes. Everything you like about the show, Gambo's inside information, the 4 o'clock reset, the interviews that we've got, like the one coming up with Kurt Warner in a half hour, all delivered to your phone every day. Just subscribe to the Burns and Gambo podcast, and the best way for you to do that is text the word podcast to 620-620, and we will hook you up. That's podcast to 620-620. So we're roughly 48 hours away from the Cardinals-Broncos kickoff. Are these the final hours of the Mike McCoy era, if that's what you want to call it, in Arizona? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.